All right. Our next speaker is Paul Willard, who is the owner and executive producer of Wildflower Interactive.
Find my pretty pictures. There I am. So as you can see, that's me. I guess the first thing about what I do is I'm a storyteller, if you can believe it, with this voice. Whether it's the story of a 1923 discovery of a tomb you may have heard of, or whether it's a day that will live in infamy, or whether it's a story of four different works of art and how they came to be and how they ended up at the Getty Museum. I'm also a writer, a researcher, and a photo editor. Sometimes it means that you are going to be ghostwriting the journal of the young Indiana Jones for Lucasfilm. Sometimes that means you need to figure out how do tornadoes work and then illustrate it in 3D. Sometimes that means you need to describe the plants and the animals and the people and the places discovered by Lewis and Clark for science, for posterity, and for history. And sometimes that means you will spend hours looking at very disturbing imagery in an attempt to find the perfect pictures, perfect in quotes, in order to tell the story the way it needs to be told. This is a piece we did for the Holocaust Museum in DC a couple years ago. I don't know if any of you have actually seen, there's a physical exhibition that goes with the website. Or rather, I guess really the website goes with the exhibit, but you know, I'm biased. I'm a producer, and a producer is someone who actually writes, produces, project manages, and develops interactive content for museums, nonprofits, and educational institutions. This includes websites, mobile apps, and interactive kiosks and installations that you've probably seen and played with in museums. This is just sort of a smattering of what I've done. You see, yes, I have done work for the AARP, and I still don't have my card because I'm not old enough yet. One piece there in the corner is the Life of Art at the Getty Museum. We did the app for the National Mall in Washington, D.C., for the National Park Service. And then we recently did a piece for the Sesquicentennial, which I can now spell, for the Museum of History in Missouri. But in all of this, I started out as an archaeologist. From the earliest times, I remember babysitting, 12, 13 years old with my cousin Karen. There's a magazine laying on the coffee table of the poor people who decided we were going to watch their kids. It was the article written about Herculaneum, and I was enthralled. For years, through middle school, through high school, through college, into grad school, that's what I wanted to be. It had nothing to do with Indiana Jones, although there was some irony when I later ended up writing the journal. I went to University of Maryland, Baltimore, for my undergrad, where I majored in visual art and ancient studies with a minor in history, which actually came about incidentally because at some certain point, you have enough classes to tack on the minors. I went to, go Gophers, University of Minnesota for grad school. When I moved to Minnesota, or when I decided after 3 years in Minnesota that I was ready to leave academia, and part of that had to do with what I wanted to do. I wanted to reach a larger audience. I became interested in publication, magazines, that sort of audience. Not really television, but I wanted to reach out to a larger group. But I still had the passion for what I had studied all those years. My advisor said, "So, you're leaving. What are you going to do now?" And I said, "Well, I'm from Maryland. I'm going to move back to D.C. I'm going to work for National Geographic or Smithsonian." And she said, "Good luck with that." In a supportive way. That was in June 1994. By November 1994, I was working for National Geographic. Granted, it was over Christmas, and I was answering phones. Can I take your order, please? There was a hiring freeze, but I got my foot in the door. And for the next year and a half, I kept taking temporary jobs. At one point, I was teaching the newfangled email to business executives, not how to compose an email. Address goes in the to file. Subject is what your email's about. And then you put words in the middle. And you push the send button. Do not do reply all, ever. I did that. And eventually, I kept hearing that they were going to launch a website. A friend of mine, who was much more technically savvy than I was, actually did some freelance work. And he calls me, and he says, they need help. And I said, all right. I cold called them. And with all the blind confidence of a 24-year-old, I said, hey, I heard you need me. The woman who answered the phone, who later became my boss, said, she goes, do you have an eye for detail? I told her I just spent years perfecting the skill of analyzing minutiae. She asked if I wrote well. I told her I'd studied Greek and Latin and had a pretty good grasp of grammar. She invited me for an interview, and I went. I had HTML for Dummies in my backpack. I had had no background in internet. I'd had an AOL account for maybe a month at that point. And I must have said something convincing, or she just was like, chutzpah will be rewarded, because she hired me. And I worked for a while as an editorial assistant. And this is one of the bosses at the time referred to that whole movement in the mid-90s when content was becoming developed on the internet. No one was really telling stories online yet. You know, you could go there and look up stuff, kinda. But this was, National Geographic was really out at the forefront of taking what they had done for over 100 years and moving it online with the text and the sounds and the photos. And I was hooked. So I was an editorial assistant. And I was an assistant producer, I almost said professor, producer. And each time I moved up, I watched these people around me who had been putting this gold border together for all these years. Not the same people, they're not immortal. But watching how they would take pictures and thousands, those pictures. There's like 30,000 pictures that are taken to get the 10 that go in the magazine for each article. And watching the text be crafted. They're actually done on parallel tracks. They don't often know which pictures are going with that. There's an entire two different teams. And watching the television people out there getting these once-in-a-lifetime type, some of the footage that they have in that collection doesn't exist. No one else has gotten it. But watching all that being put together, I learned step by step. So as an assistant producer, I'm installing webcams at McNeil River on grizzly bears. I didn't have a background in grizzly bears, but I could look it up. And then I became a producer, and I got more responsibility. I learned how to write budgets, scary stuff. I learned how to manage larger teams. And they kept giving me the opportunities, but I also kept looking for the next opportunity because this job didn't exist really until we created it. You're sort of laying the track as the train is coming to a certain degree. Eventually, I became the managing producer of the website, and I was responsible for the entire editorial content. There's supposed to be a picture there. It disappeared. Pretend. Put anything. Cheetah. Whatever you want. And I did that until 2007, at which point I decided that I'd grown as far as I thought I was going to grow for the society, and it was time to go out on my own, which is what I did. So I got with a design partner, and I created Wildflower Interactive. I named it Wildflower mostly because there's sort of a thought about wildflowers as being pretty, but they're also pretty tough, and they'll grow anywhere. And so there's a certain symbolism in why I chose that name. But I took everything I'd learned at National Geographic. I figured out the financial stuff because there were budgets and proposal writing, and there's all these other elements that go into it. But then I also looked at, you know, legally, someone is agreeing to pay me numbers with commas in them for work that I'm going to do, and I want to make sure I get my commas. So you have to figure out the legal part of it. So that was a learning curve, but there are great books out there, the NOLO series, that if you are interested in setting up your own company, your own LLC, whether it's in media development, which is what I do, or anything, reach out to those kind of resources because I have them all on my desk and I refer to them and they've got all the post-it stickies on the side. They're great. So how did archaeology help me? Research skills. My advisor in grad school, Sheila McNally, told me, you don't have to know everything. You have to know where to look it up. I can research anything. For every project, I become a content expert. I still joke that I really honestly think I could get an honorary MA in Lewis and Clark at this point. I've researched the Inca and the Maya. I know how the human heart works. I know the sound a giraffe makes. That's a trick because they don't make sounds. And I've had to study the entirety of human history over 200,000 years. That's a lot. And I never had really studied anything before, let's say, 5,000 BC. The other thing I've had to study, aerodynamics of wave soaring. If you know how to research, none of this is daunting. You know how to start. You know where, how to begin to break that down. And in breaking that down, you're not only learning it yourself, you're figuring out how to tell that to somebody, how to tell that story, how to tell, break it down in such a way that a general audience is going to get it. The other thing is never underestimate your language skills. How often do I use the Greek and Latin and French and Italian and Spanish and German and whatever else I happen to have stumbled across over the years? Literally not often, but the way that I learned it is very applicable, and it also makes for good cocktail party little tricks. But what it's also given you is a firm grasp of grammar and the ability to write good, write well, and it has improved your speaking skills. And we like to say it, you can probably break out the hoom broom with just about anybody. Who knew, though, that my ability to read Greek would one day help me when one of my projects was on the Lost Gospel of Judas for National Geographic, which is in Coptic, by the way. I don't read Coptic, but I read Greek. And we decided one of the things we wanted to do was to take this document and present it in Coptic and English and German and Spanish and French. Ta-da! So the other thing is, of course, archaeology. Seems kind of one of those degrees that your mama goes, really, when that's what you say you're going to do. Sometimes you actually do get to use what you studied. And yeah, people will assume, if you say archaeologist, that you know things about dinosaurs. They'll also confuse archaeology with anthropology, and they'll ask you if archaeology is just like Indiana Jones. No. But the other thing that I learned, of course, is art history. How many of us have had to sit in that room with pictures on the wall, Compare and contrast. What is this? Look at this piece of pottery. Well, you're learning art historical theory, whether you knew it or not. And you're able to apply that to a cartoon with an animated Thomas Jefferson to teach kids about neoclassical architecture by letting them play. So, you know, do they want stained glass windows at Monticello? And as Mr. Jefferson will tell you, very pretty, but not neoclassical. Or do you, my little pithy summary, identify what you love most about what you studied. Is it the topic? Is it the feeling you get from learning something new, regardless of the topic? Excuse me. No, I'm afraid I'll choke on it. Think about what the current jobs exist. A lot of people here have pointed out, here's the jobs that are out there. Think about the job you want. Think about the job that may not exist yet. Interactive producer in 1996? What's that? Because there's always new types of jobs, especially, excuse me, if you want to get into new media and digital and that sort of content. Apply everything you've learned and think about how did you learn it? Because that's how you can turn around and help somebody else learn it. Finally, be daring. Have that chutzpah to pick up the phone and say, hey, you need me. Be creative. Think about how does what you love turn into cash? Be determined. There are going to be people that will say, you don't know how to program HTML. I can buy a book. You don't understand how servers work. I can figure it out. And that's what you need to do. You need to find the resources. They've given you some great sources there. Take a community college class. There's a lot, and they're often not that expensive, that will, you know, whether it's in digital photography or any of those types of things, any of that kind of self-development else, and it pays off in spades. So I think, yes, that's my last slide. That's what I do. I'm really not teary, I'm just joking. Thank you. Questions? Anybody else want to work for National Geographic when you grow up? Any questions? Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
How much do you felt like you needed to learn after, in order to have this job? How much more was the learning quantity you needed?
I learned all of it on the job, and it came in pieces, because when the website first launched in 96, we were skeleton staffed, because honestly they thought it was going to be an investment that didn't pay off. So we were sort of, you know, I was doing editorial work and minor programming and. But because I had to do these other four things than the one thing I was hired for, I learned how to do them so that when I moved on to the next job, I had that background. I, at one point, was the only producer allowed to touch the server. But not after midnight. Any other questions? Okay.